Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news relating to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. And now, here is your host of Lickin' on Lending, David Lickin.
Welcome to the broadcast, everybody. So good to have you here with us. It is Monday, April 25th, 2016. We appreciate you joining us. Today on the Hot Topic segment, we have Edward Golding, joining us from FHA. He's very excited about having him visit. For those of you who have attended many industry conferences, you've heard Mr. Golding speak, and we're really honored and privileged to talk about FHA, the future of FHA. So much going on with this election, and where does it look like? Where's the industry going? What's up with FHA? So we're going to be getting it right from Ed's direct perspective. So we're looking forward to it. So appreciate you tuning in and being a part of the podcast. And if you could see, this is a live broadcast. If you could see some of the things that go on behind the scenes just as we're scrambling to get in to this, get this live, it's always one of those things. Did you see the movie Broadcast News a number of years ago? And you see them running as they dive to get the things set up. Well, that kind of way it felt this morning. But anyway, it's a good Monday here in Central Texas. We appreciate you tuning in. This broadcast is created by mortgage professionals for mortgage professionals, and we're the proud recipient of the Progress in Lending Award. I want to say a very special thank you to our sponsors. They are Arch MI, who is creator of the innovative RateStar product. We have Motivity Solutions, the mortgage industry's leading business intelligence technology and the nation's leading company that provides real-time reporting, dashboards, and scorecards. They tie into your LOS system and bring you real-time data. It is such a valuable tool. We're going to hear more about that, and they have a KPI of the week we're going to be sharing with you in just a bit. Velma, if you're looking for a great marketing company to help you get the word out about your company, all the things that are going on, you should use, or at least consider using Velma, which stands for the Virtual Electronic Marketing Assistant. You can go to Velma.com or get a hold of Brett Emler and email him. He's just, I tell you, this crew does a great job of getting the word out for you. They have a set it and forget it program, so they also can create programs on the fly. Also, Simplifile, we're grateful to have them as a sponsor. They're in a post-TRID world. Timing is of essence, and waiting for an email as for the latest update is no longer acceptable. Simplifile will allow you to collaborate with settlement agents by way of real-time chat and messaging. You also track, share, and receive validation of documents and data in a real-time manner. So when you're looking at communicating with the various partners that you're working with, especially when it comes to closing, electronic communication, having it be trackable is really a key. So go check it out at Simplifile.com, Simplifile.com, or call 1-800-460-5657. Also, a special thank you to D&H, who has recently joined us. Go back and listen to the podcast. I was with, as you guys know, I was down in San Antonio last week. I got a chance to take a look at the barometer product that they have coming out. Very innovative stuff, and it's very exciting. They have a list of products that they have offer. They're in the fintech space, financial tech services. They have bank products. It is a full range of suite of products that I encourage you to check out. Go to dh.com. Man, they must have gotten that a long time ago. To have a two-letter web address is pretty amazing. So anyway, also special thank you goes out to our contributors, Alice Alvey, Joe Farr, Andy Schell, Paul Mallow, Sam Garcia, and everyone else who participates in this broadcast to make it the number one most listened to podcast in the industry. We got upcoming conferences. We have the Legal Issues and Regulatory Compliance Conference in Denver at the Hyatt Regency. I'll be speaking at the event that is preceding it by just one day. It is Compliance Eases event. I'm speaking at that twice. Real honored to be there. So if you're in Denver, swing on over to the Compliance Ease Conference and User Conference will be there. Also, May 15th through the 18th, the National MBA Secondary Conference in New York City at the New York Marriott. I'll be there broadcasting live from there. From the conference, also June 5th through the 8th, the Chairman's Conference in the Breakers in Palm Beach, Florida. It's a great conference. Really, when you look at the speakers, I mean, all the NBA events are great, but there's something special about the NBA Chairman's Conference, the caliber of speakers there, and the depth at which they get into specifics of what's going on in the industry. Very, very valuable information comes from it. And while you're checking out all the NBA conferences, be sure to sign up for NBA's Mortgage Action Alliance. Joe Farr, good to have you here with us each and every week, giving us an update on the markets. So let's talk about it.
Not much to report on today. Yeah, MBS prices are just about where they ended the day on Friday. We're up just a touch. Actually, we just went down below where we ended the day on Friday just a little bit. But the only economic news to come out today was the new home sales, which came in a little weaker than expected and a little bit below the revised number for last month. Stocks have been a little more volatile today than MBS has. They're currently off about 50 basis points on the Dow. They were down 150 earlier today. I think some weakness out of Germany was hard on stocks to start the day. And so not much going on today. Last week, we had a pretty active week starting on Wednesday. You might recall the last couple looking on lending shows, we've said mortgage rates are just about where they had been, not a lot of movement, and at or near the lowest levels in a couple years. Well, starting on Wednesday, MBS prices fell about 55 basis points by the end of the week, and mortgage rates rose about 8 basis points during that time. But again, that's off very low rates, and so, you know, an 8 basis point rise isn't all that harmful to activity. Prices started falling ahead of the ECB meeting, and then when the ECB chose not to provide any additional stimulus, they fell a little bit further, and that was most of the reason for movement last week. The mixed economic data that came out in the U.S. didn't have much effect on mortgage rates. Housing data was mixed, as you might recall. Existing home sales rose, which was nice, to 5.33 million units, up from just over 5 million units in February, while housing starts and permits slowed in February from March. And the home builder survey was pretty much unchanged. Boy, jobless claims got even worse. You remember last week we talked about them being at 253,000, which was the best since 1973, and this week they beat them. They were there. Well, last week they beat them 247,000. Obviously, the lowest since 1973, and certainly indicates an improving labor market. So this week's a big week, Dave. Tomorrow, durable orders comes out at 8:30. Consumer confidence comes out at 10. Then on Wednesday, pending home sales comes out ahead of the Fed statement, which will be released at 2. That ought to be an interesting event. Be sure to pay attention around that time. No change in the Fed funds rates expected, but investors will be looking for what kind of change there might be, if any, in the tone of the governors and what that might cause investors to expect about future meetings. Bank of Japan's meeting Thursday, but the statement would come out late Wednesday, our time. You know, this is a crapshoot. Investors really don't know what to expect out of Japan. They could do nothing or they could do something extreme. It's not as big an event as the ECB meeting is for us, but it could be an interesting announcement and certainly maybe something to pay attention to late Wednesday, early Thursday morning. Also early Thursday morning is the first quarter GDP. It's set to be released at 8:30, and consensus is for a 1% growth rate there for the first quarter. Friday, core PCE comes out at 8:30, then Chicago PMI at 9:45, and consumer sentiment at 10. So it's really a busy week.
Busy week. You know, I got to give you a shout out on something on your website that I have been using for a while, and I want to make sure those that are not using it, your site, understand the additional benefits of it. But for example, consumer confidence. I was looking at that last night. I do the Today's Mortgage Minute video, which I do every day, and it's out and across 120 radio, television, newspaper websites, and gets around 10 to 16 million views each week. And so I'm always looking for content. What's resources? What's this consumer confidence? How does it compare to consumer sentiment that's coming up? And then I clicked on it. So for those that are not aware of it, when you go and look at the number and you see consumer confidence, for example, you click on that and it opens up and gives you a description of what that is. There's so much good information on your website. And the way it's organized, you just get right to what you need. It's right, concise, to the point. And I gotta compliment you, Joe, the way you've organized this
thing. Thank you.
But does it have this? That? You know, it has what you need, and that gets you to where you need to be. And that's the most important part. If you want to be an analyst, you can go spend thousands and thousands of dollars, but you can deal with MBS Quote Line and have what you need there to give concise answers. And that's what you need to do, folks. So, Joe, I really give you compliments on your website. You do a great job.
Thank you, sir.
Information. All right, we're going to be right back with Paul Mallow in just a minute. Let's see. Is Paul dialed in? I'm going to make sure if he's dialed in here. He may not be joining us today. We'll find out. If not, we'll go to Al Salvi. Good to have you with us. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Looking for that competitive edge? MBS QuoteLine delivers live market coverage for originators. Get up-to-the-minute mortgage market news and analysis as events occur. Get MBS prices as trades happen. Straight to your computer, email, cell phone, or PDA. Know in advance when your investors will reprice. Make better lock-float decisions and increase your income. Be the expert your clients expect and know what's moving interest rates right now, tomorrow, and beyond. MBS QuoteLine, delivering live market coverage for originators. Learn more about MBS QuoteLine today at MBSQuoteLine.com. MBSQuoteLine.com. 646-716-4972. The Lincoln on Lending Show is back. Here is your host, David Lincoln.
Yeah, it's good to have you with us, everybody. I'm looking for Paul Mallow. He's usually dialed in at this point. If you're not, check out their website. If he's not, let's give it just a minute here. He may be dialing in late. But if you're not familiar with Inside Mortgage Finance, they have a website with a newsletter connect. It's called IMF News. They do a great job of covering a lot of the news stories. And so I encourage you to get over to that website, imfnews.com. I don't see Paul dialed in, so we're going to move on to Alice Alvey. Alice, good to have you here with us. And is it starting to warm up there? The spring has sprung up there in the beautiful part of the country?
It has. So we are having beautiful weather this spring. So for those of you who don't recall, I'm up in the Detroit area in Michigan, and it is beautiful.
You just said that. Yeah, thanks. We have so many listeners that listen to you so much on here. I just assume where they know, but it's good. Yeah, Detroit, Michigan. good to see it's all going on there. It's beautiful down here.
Well,
so let's take a look. Go ahead.
I think with our FHA focus, I thought I'd pick up on a couple of things that we've been watching over time. Now, from a House bill standpoint, there is House Bill 3700 that picked up several things from FHA, about FHA that had been in housing in general, that had kind of been out in multiple bills, and they scooped up everything, of course, as Congress does, and puts a lot of things together that don't really go together. But one of the parts in this is about the FHA mortgage insurance for condominiums. There hasn't been any movement on this since February, but it's got a lot of sponsors. And usually this effort, when they start combining things, means it might start to get some traction for something, right? If they could accomplish something this year, maybe this one might be it. So I am going to watch this for you. What it does mean for condos is essentially looking for FHA to streamline the recertification process. For those of you in condominium markets, you know that you get that, go through all that paperwork, and then 2 years later, you've got to go through most of it again and really trying to put a charge out there in a lot of ways to give FHA the authority then to expand how long that is valid for, maybe give us 3, 4, even 5 years that condo certification is good for, or at least streamlining that regular update certification for those good projects that have been stable and have good history. So we'll definitely be watching that since it's an advantage for what we want to see for FHA. And then also there's Senate Bill 2012, this Energy Policy Modernization Act had a little component in there for FHA to reduce the amount of, making sure that energy costs are included in the underwriting process. Now, we don't need to do that. We're not really hoping this makes its way through. We know how much of a challenge that is with VAs trying to remember to put in that utility cost. you know, we're really, if you think about it, it's already factored in with the ratios and so forth that we're using it. So I'm not sure why this is out there, but since our focus today is FHA, I thought I'd bring up a few points. So we'll definitely be making sure that one goes away. And last but not least, the one bill that we do think is we want to watch, see if MBA can get some traction for, and that's House Bill 2121 for the SAFE Act, that transformational licensing component that a lot of folks say, oh, Si, you want to push to get this through because it does help in your careers as you may move between banks and lenders. So that's House Bill 2121. We'll be watching that for you as well. So that's my update for today, Dave. I'm so excited to have Ed Golding on the call today.
I'm looking forward to that, too. Lots of great information will come up from that. Thank you so much, Alice. Appreciate it. And, folks, if you're looking for someone to handle your training needs or just help you through so many of the issues that are going on today, you need to get a hold of Alice at Mortgage U or Indicom. Now, are you still hang on to the name Mortgage-U? You still have that, do you, Matt?
Yeah, we do have our Mortgage U name and Mortgage-U.com. But, of course, we are part of the wonderful Indicom family, so we are known as Indicom Mortgage U.
Indicom Mortgage, you got to make sure we get that right, folks. If you want to learn more, stay tuned to this message. We'll be right back after this brief word.
If you have questions about mortgage regulations, Indicom Mortgage U has free answers. If you need ideas about how to reinvent your organization, Indicom Mortgage U will share great ideas. When you need help at any step of the loan process, give us a call or send an email. The Indicom team of experts have been helping mortgage players from origination through servicing for over 30 years. Your success is our focus. Whether it's a quick question or long-term support, portfolio, conventional, or government lending, it's a competitive market. So let Indicom Mortgage U give you the edge.
Yes, they do. They will definitely give you the edge. Sam Garcia, it's always so much fun to have you here and joining in. Sam has a website called Mortgage Daily. If you do not check him, if you're not signed up to that website, I encourage you to get it. It's got not only some great news and updates what's going on in the industry, but also some great data there. Sam, how are you doing, my friend? How's things up in Dallas?
Things are good. Things are good. Thank you. And we've got some data for today, actually, too, so it should be interesting. Our mortgage market index, which is a reflection of average per user rate locks by clients of open close, was mostly unchanged last week, but the index was up 11% from a year earlier. And in relation, you know, related to today's show, rate locks for FHA mortgages jumped 11% from last week. It was the biggest gain of any category. So FHA did pretty good. And compared to a year ago, FHA business was up more than half, so that's a pretty big jump on a year-over-year basis. Some good news that came out last week, Freddie Mac's monthly mortgage finance forecast indicates that it expects about $680 billion in refinance originations this year, and that was up from March's forecast. And it was the same thing over at the Mortgage Bankers Association, which put out its April economic outlook. And it increased its refinance projection for this year to $585 billion from just $550 billion last month. So some of these recently low rates having an impact and are going to make business a little bit better than previously expected. Black Knight reported that the 30-day delinquency rate, excluding foreclosures, was 4.08% in March, and the rate tumbled from 4.45% the prior month. Always good news to have better loan performance. I know that Joe discussed today's new home sales report was a little bit weak, but there was one pretty positive piece of data that came out of that report, and that was the inventory of new homes because, I mean, as you're probably aware, some of the problems with our real estate market out there is there's just not enough homes for sale. And so new homes for sale, as far as that were for sale as of March, that inventory was 246,000 properties. That's the biggest inventory since September of 2009, based on some historical data we pulled up from Census Bureau and HUD. So that's a good sign that we've got a little bit expanding inventory and possibly could be good news for the real estate market in general. You know, we do our course, our quarterly mortgage origination survey. So we've got that going in full swing right now for the first quarter of this year. And Quicken Loans reported that it did $19.4 billion in loan originations during the first 3 months of this year. And that was up 5% from the final quarter of last year, which is better than most lenders, because everything we're tracking is business was pretty much down for most lenders. Not a whole lot, but was weaker during the first quarter versus the fourth quarter. So that's a good sign. And in addition, Quicken reported that its servicing portfolio for the first time exceeded $200 billion. So that's a pretty good size servicing portfolio, especially given that they weren't even in the servicing business, you know, just a few years back. And in addition, their staff was up by 2,000 people between, you know, the end of last year and March 31st of this year. So they've got some pretty significant growth going on over there at Quicken in Detroit. So finally, one other story we covered was we picked this up. Wells Fargo disclosed last week that it had 251 layoffs nationally that it's doing, and a big share of those were in North Carolina. And the company, as it's, you know, stated in the past on other layoffs, indicated that the job cuts were the result of lower levels of distress loans and weaker refinance demand. So those are some of the highlights, though, from the last week as far as at Mortgage Daily.
Great website. I appreciate you taking time to bring us some of the highlights on your website. Encourage people to go out, our listeners to go out and sign up for your service. You can go to www.mortgagedaily.com or get a hold of Sam at samgarcia@mortgagedaily.com or call him 214-521-1300. Sam, thank you so much for dialing in, my friend. Have yourself a great week up there.
You too. Thank you, David.
You bet. Well, we've got Jim Jump, who has been who is the Arch Mortgage's chief marketing officer, and they've launched an innovative RateStar program. And Jim has pre-recorded some comments I want to share with you at this time.
Hello, David, and thanks for having me on the program. Today I want to share some information about ArchMI's most dynamic and competitive rate program. It's called ArchMI RateStar, and it's a revolutionary mortgage insurance pricing solution that goes well beyond traditional MI rate sheets to provide our most competitive rates matched precisely with your borrower. RateStar is now available, and all you need is your NMLS number to start using RateStar today. RateStar allows for our customers to obtain our most competitive rate for each loan they insure with ArchMI, and in many cases, with considerable savings over traditional rate card pricing. Mortgage originators are letting us know that they like how easy it is to access RateStar, just how easy it is to use, and they really like the innovative design. RateStar is available to our customers via ArchMI's website at archmi.com or archmicu.com for credit unions, and the mobile app is available for Apple and Android devices. It is fully integrated with most loan origination systems and product and pricing engines. And with that, David, I will turn it back over to you and say thank you for the time.
You bet, Jim. Appreciate you being a sponsor, and say thank you to everyone there at ArchMI. If you have not reached out to their sales reps, be sure to do so. Learn about it. I was on their website. I think I told you about this all last week, and I saw the cost savings that you could realize by using this this app. Very powerful, very effective. Profit Doctor, he's in the house. I always put a smile on my face because, you know, I learn something every time I listen to this guy talk, and so I'm excited to have you here, Profit Doctor. Good to have you, my friend.
Hey, Dave Licken, it's always awesome to be here with you. It's one of my favorite times of the week.
Oh, I appreciate that. Well, what words?
So, Dave, I wanted to talk about some of the calls we've been getting from, you know, we're like the fire department, and you do the same thing. You're in the same business. And so if people would call us in advance, it makes life so much easier for them. But, you know, everybody thinks they can do it themselves.
The case, though,
and then, no, they call us with their hair on fire and want us to fix it. And so we go in and do that. But a couple of the things that we've been having recurring calls about is something I wanted to mention real quickly, because we wanted to get on to hear about Dr. Ed talk. So
yes.
in starting, whether if this is about changing and managing change, or called change management, but it's about, you know, if you're looking at getting a new origination system, or you're looking at getting a new pricing solution, or you're looking at even changing your flood vendor, I mean, whatever it is, all of these things that revolve around mortgage lending, where we have third-party service providers, other companies who do things for us. Whenever we change from one to another, it's not like the light switch just gets flicked and the light comes on. It's substantially more difficult than that, depending upon what it is. But in every case, we really need to know the answers to a couple of questions. We need to know what it is we need, and we need to know why we need it. And along with knowing why we need it, we need it because it's going to make everything awesome. It's going to make everything be smoother. It's going to fix all of our problems. You know, if you listen to a salesperson, that's always the case. It's going to be better. But we need to put some dollars behind it. We need to understand the cost. And almost most importantly, let's assume that we can afford it and we really need it. So then the next thing then is this conversion, this transition. And these conversions are always disruptive, and they're change, and things aren't where they're supposed to be, and you can't find stuff anymore, and they can't get the funds out because they can't figure out what button to push, and the realtor's screaming at the originator because the funds aren't titled yet. And so, you know, just a couple of rules of thumb about dealing with these kind of changes. First off, no matter what you think, it's going to take longer and cost more. Always does. And Joe and Alice and Dave are all on mute at this moment, but they're all chuckling because that's always the truth. Also,
I'm chuckling out loud.
This is preaching to the choir for them.
Yes,
also, you know, your existing staff that you have on board right now today are busy. Otherwise, you wouldn't have them. And so to think that they have extra time to manage a conversion or have the expertise to manage a conversion is almost always they don't. They don't have the time and they don't know how, because it's a very detailed project management kind of stuff. And while that sounds easy, it's like being the architect to build a house and then being the general contractor to construct a house. There's thousands of details and thousands of components to put into all of these elements to make it stand up straight and be safe. So that's what we all want. We want to have a safe transition. So at the end of the day, don't expect your staff to do it. Get third-party support. Get somebody else to come in and help manage your transition. Give, you know, everybody on this call can give you recommendations for who that could be. Alice supports it. My group supports it. Dave supports it. We all do it. But at the end of the day, just expect it to take longer. It's going to cost more. And most importantly, do not expect your staff to just pick it up as another project, because every company we go into where they try to do that, it doesn't work as well as they had hoped. So it's better for your staff to save the grief, get some help. There you go, Dave. You agree?
That's good. Save the grief, get some help. You know, and you're so, to your point that everyone waits to the last minute or until their hair's on fire, it's the wrong time. It's like, you know, we got all the metaphors in the world. It's a good idea to just call and get the help ahead of time and get some advice in there, because it's cheaper. It really is. Andy, thank you so much. Appreciate it. I'm also better known as the Prophet Doctor. I go out and I was at a conference just recently. It was one out in L.A. at the tech conference, and they were quoting the Prophet Doctor. Well, I like what the Prophet Doctor, I said, can I ask you a question? Do you know the name of the Prophet Doctor? And they go, they got this smile, they go, no, I don't. And I said, it's because it sticks so well. So it's a good, as they say in certain languages, in certain places, certain circles, it's a good handle. So keep it, it's working well. So
thank you, Dave.
Locking onto you. I appreciate it so much. A lot of wisdom there, and a lot of great experience. So you reach out to get a hold of Andy. So, Andy, how can they reach you? What is the best way? What's your preferred way for them to connect with you?
The best way is to send me an email, andy@mbs-team.com. Very simple, very easy. Works every time.
It works every time. Well, that's good. Well, appreciate you being here, friend, and I'm looking forward to having you participate in the discussion with Dr. Ed Golding, so it'd be very good to have him. You know, that's what's so nice, Andy, when you find someone who has as many degrees and distinguished degrees, magna cum laude from Harvard, nonetheless, and a PhD in economics from Princeton University. And you know what? Ed is so humble. You just meet him, and I just enjoy people like that who have all these degrees, but, you know, they're just who they are, and I just really enjoy it. So I'm looking forward to your participation in that discussion shortly here.
Thanks, Dave.
Folks, we also have the Motivity provides us the KPI, or the Key Performance Indicator of the Week, and we've got John Maynell, who pre-recorded the comments for us. He's VP of Client Services. So let's turn to John for the Motivity KPI of the Week.
Hello. Thanks very much, David. Always good to be here. And this week's Key Performance Indicator is application to funded cycle time. Since the arrival of TRID, cycle time measurements have obviously come to the forefront, everything from looking at the entire application to funded cycle down to subcycles, or cycle time between milestones. Everyone wants to compress cycle time, and the beauty of this type of strategic KPI is that it can be tied to operational KPIs that track the tasks or processes within the cycle that contribute to how long or short that cycle is. So operational KPIs can be thought of as the cause, and strategic KPIs are the effect. And balancing and monitoring these key measurements really can drive performance, and this demonstrates again that what gets measured gets results. And with that, David, I will turn it back to you. Thanks very much again.
You bet. Thank you so much, John. And if you want to learn more about all the KPIs that you can track and have as on your dashboard, go to MotivitySolutions.com or call them at 303-721-9000. It's a great service. I don't know how people run their business without a real-time dashboard. It's a really, really powerful tool for everyone out there. So excited to have Dr. Edward Golding joining us. He is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Housing, and it is a real honor. I've listened to Ed speak a number of times at conferences. I always enjoy his comments. I always enjoy the fact that he's just so approachable or real, and he spends whatever time is necessary to talk to those of us that run up to talk to him after the conference. He has worked in the field of mortgage finance for more than 25 years, is currently, again, Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Housing. Prior to serving at HUD, Ed was the Senior Fellow at the Urban Institute, where he played an instrumental role in launching the Housing Finance Policy Center, a leading research voice in the housing finance matters. He began his career at the Federal Home Loan Bank Board, and during the savings and loan crisis, boy, what a man, there's a lot of stories he has there he could share with us. And then joined Freddie Mac, where he worked for 23 years prior to working in mortgage finance. Dr. Golding taught at the University of Pennsylvania and University of Florida. He earned, again, an AB degree in applied mathematics, was graduated magna cum laude from Harvard. Now that is something. And a PhD in economics from Princeton. So please join me in welcoming Ed Golding to the radio program. Ed, good to have you here, sir.
Yeah, good to be here, and thanks for the kind introduction.
Well, you are, again, one of the things I enjoy, Ed, is I get the privilege of hanging around a lot of well-educated people, and I look at some who seem to buy the degrees. I don't know if that's actually the way it is, but they insist on being doctor this, doctor that. Ed, one of the things I enjoy most about who you are and how you approach the industry is you're just Ed Golding, and you're out here to help, and you're privileged to have a very key role as the principal deputy assistant at the secretary, assistant secretary there for the Office of Housing, HUD. And so it's a real privilege to talk to you about what's going on. So let's start off with this. Love to hear what your perspective is. What's new at FHA? It's been around forever, but what's new? What's going on there?
Well, it has been around, not quite forever, but for 82 years.
Like
I think
ever,
what's new, I'm a little bit of a historian along with that applied math. But, what's new is in some sense what's old. We are an important part of the housing market, proud to play that role, and we really focus on, first-time home buyers. We're almost a majority of that market, and as you know, and as your audience knows, this is part of the market that just needs more attention. We need more first-time home buyers out there. You know, good to hear from your guests that the volumes are heading up, but by a lot of estimates, we're still short of where we need to be.
Well, you sit and look at we're in the, as David Stevens refers to, election, and this is certainly going to have ramifications to FHA and HUD. So what do you want to get done between now and the end of the administration's current term?
Well, some of these started when Dave was sitting in the same office, but we still have a list of things that we owe the industry that we said we, you know, need to get done, and I just want to make sure I don't get an incomplete on that. So we still have to finish up sections of the handbook. Very important to get all the mortgagee letters in one place so the industry can understand the rules. And speaking of rules, of course, there's still, as one of your commenters mentioned, the condo rule to finish up. So we have a busy agenda and 9 months to go before we turn the keys over to the next administration.
That's going to be very interesting. Alice, I saw you dropped. Are you back in and dialed in? Do I have your right phone number turned on for you?
Yep, I'm back. Thank you. Welcome to the program. So in August of last year, FHA announced its intention to develop a PACE second lien program. So property assessed clean energy for PACE. For those of you who want the translation on that, can you update us on how that policy is coming along?
Yes, we've made, you know, good progress. I've learned not to ever make a forward-looking statement on exact dates that things will be released. I'm always wrong. I'm always the optimist. I always say tomorrow, and it's always the day after that. But we are making good progress. I do hope that it will be out soon. It's, you know, an important product. Energy efficiency is important, and at the same time, we want to make sure we protect the insurance fund. So we're working hard to find that right sort of the sweet spot, the right balance to allow lending to continue, including energy efficient lending, while still protecting you know, our interest as a, you know, insurer of first liens.
Sure. Okay. And then in March you released the final version of the loan level certification. So I'd like to know from your vantage point how it's been received by the industry, and does this close the book, so to speak, on the certification issue?
I don't think you ever close the books on certification, but it's, you know, first of all, let me just mention, you know, briefly what we think we accomplished, what we were trying to accomplish, and that was to be very clear with the lenders what was expected of them. We clearly, you know, want to hold lenders to high standards, but there's always this concern that the rules are unclear, that we're going after footfalls and the like, small mistakes on debt-to-income ratios, you know, in the you know, 400-page file, any one small mistake would cause an issue. And what we very clearly, what I believe we very clearly stated is, if you are saying that there are no defects that would affect basically insurability, or, you know, put another way, had you known about the defect, would you still have gone ahead and made the loan? So clearly, if it's, you know, in almost all cases, if it's a small mistake on income verification, you would make that loan every day. If it were a large mistake, or if the appraisal weren't valid, those are the types of mistakes that where you wouldn't make the loan, and that would be, you know, sort of considered a defect. So we were trying to make a, you know, closer to a, you know, a clear line of what type of defects you are certifying to and not certifying to. You know, as you know, it's a large industry. I've had, you know, people say that we've made, you know, a very good step forward, but at the end of the day, these are, you know, individual decisions that each lender is going to have to make on whether they're, you know, comfortable making the certification.
Joe Farr, I want to get you into the discussion. I want to make sure that you get a few questions in. Joe is struggling to find his mute button, right? Unmute.
I do that every time. Ed, I appreciate having you on the show today. And I know that FHA's done a good bit here lately to make credit available to more people. And I did want to ask if we have more to look forward to in that regard.
Well, yes. I mean, in the sense that we are not where we need to be in terms of credit availability. So I'm, you know, the good news, I think year over year, we did about 100,000 more purchase mortgage loans endorsed year over year. I would like to see that volume increase, because I think there are a lot of people still on the sidelines of not purchasing houses who should be purchasing houses. So we will encourage, again, we don't make the loans, we only insure them, and we will work on such things, as I mentioned, clarifying the handbook and working on the condo rule to make it easier for lenders to make appropriate loans. But I would like to, you know, when I look at the market and where we are on first-time home buyers, it looks like people are still on the sidelines. I think we as an industry need to do more to attract those borrowers.
Yeah, and one of the impediments there, especially for first-time home buyers, is student debt. And can you speak to that? Is there any thing we can look forward to as it regards student debt?
Yeah, well, in fact, last week we clarified our rules, did something similar to what Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae had done, which was how to incorporate student debt into the calculations for debt-to-income ratio. What if you're if they're deferred payments? Well, you know, how much should you put in for if the loan is not being paid right now? And we basically gave guidance to the industry on that. You know, student loan debt, different analysts look at it, and you know, have different people have views on how much of an impediment it is to the new, you know, the next generation buying a house. You know, we'll continue to monitor it. I think, you know, it, very often student debt falls into sort of three camps. There's obviously the doctors and lawyers who have a lot of student debt, but also have acquired a very valuable degree and will make, you know, a good amount of income. I don't think people are as concerned about that group. You know, there's a group that has a modest amount of student debt that is not a big impediment to buying a house. And then there's, I think, the third group where people are particularly, you know, concerned, where they have large amounts of student debt, especially for those who didn't finish the degree. And that becomes very problematic. We are saddling folks with, you know, additional debt, but do not have the earnings growth that you would trust that education will get to. So it's we've done some things to, we think, give industry guidance on how to incorporate it. We'll continue to monitor it to see whether it is continues to be an impediment to homeownership.
That's interesting. Indeed, when you look at student loan debt, it is having a big impact and drawing people into the market. I want to get into that, but I want to toss the mic over to Andy Schell. Profit Doctor?
Thanks, Dave. And Ed, thanks so much for being on the call. You know, we go through our application process, and we've got our new borrower who's so excited about their house, and they've got their master's degree in English literature, and they buy the house, and all of a sudden they find themselves working at McDonald's. And now what? So now we've got a distressed loan. They're having trouble paying back. So what are we going to do? And obviously the Distressed Asset Stabilization Program has been getting some attention lately, and, you know, there's updates regularly. And do you foresee making changes to this program?
The Distressed Asset Stabilization, or as everything in Washington gets a acronym of DASP, has been a program that, you know, has two objectives. One is to try to keep people in their house if possible. We don't want to have to foreclose on the homeowner if we can. And so that's one objective. And the other objective is the protection of the fund. We want to basically lower the cost of disposing of delinquent loans. And, you know, the program has achieved both those objectives. We now have tens of thousands of homeowners who haven't been foreclosed on because of the DASP program. And at the same time, you know, we calculate the fund has probably saved hundreds of millions of dollars. But as one of your guests, you know, pointed out, change management is always upon us. And it's a program that we've, over time, made improvements to, and we will continue to try to do that. We'll try to see whether we can get the program to focus even more on loss mitigation so that homeowners aren't losing their homes. And again, most of these loans are ones where they've exhausted the traditional FHA loss mitigation program. So in some sense, it's another opportunity for loss mit.
Yes,
and the other thing,
exactly. And I do love change management, and we've got to deal with the good and the bad and the ugly sometimes, and distressed properties. So it sounds like it's been going great, saving the fund money and helping people stay in their homes. And DASP, right? That's what we call it. I know
yep.
DASP and other policy changes have helped FHA build the fund, right? We want to build it, not shrink it. So how would you describe the health of FHA now, and especially with the MMI fund?
Yeah, we are measured in Congress. I was up testifying, and many of the questions were about the health of the fund. And, you know, I was very happy to be able to report that we are over that 2% capital reserve ratio. So the amount of our reserve fund divided by the number of mortgages or the dollar amount of mortgages that we insure is now over 2%. So a big success, and every indication is it will continue to grow this year and next year.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
We're getting some questions in from some of our listeners that, first of all, they're looking at, they loved your perspective. I mean, if we see, first of all, FHA's been around for 82 years, as you said. It's been there as a stable force. This is an unusual election cycle, one of the most fascinating. I guess each one of them have been to some degree, but this one is over the top. Several of our listeners would love to get your perspective, and I know you're part of this administration, so we're not asking for anything that's inappropriate here, but several listeners said would love to get Ed's perspective on, and where does this, what are some of the things that we could anticipate as it relates to outcomes of this election, which way it goes, either way. So, and we talked a little bit about that earlier, but we'd love to talk about moving beyond this administration, your perspective on things, or maybe it should be characterized as things you're hoping won't change or needs to change yet.
Well, yeah, let me remember I was the applied math major, not that poli-sci major, but so I tend not to, I try to stick to the numbers. But first of all, sort of want to emphasize the historical bipartisan support for FHA. Year in, year out, it is a program that, you know, folks realize put people in houses. It did it in the 1950s for my father returning from World War II with some, you know, completing his college education on the GI Bill. It was there for him. We have to make sure it's there for the next generation. So I, rhetoric aside, I am hopeful that housing will continue to enjoy sort of the bipartisan support and people will recognize FHA's importance. And very quickly, you know, the next administration will also have housing finance reform and how to restructure on its plate. And it is likely FHA will be part of that discussion along with the GSEs.
Just got an email. And then Andy and Alice and Joe are going to come around to each of you for some additional questions here. One of the listeners just said, what is the temperature on the Hill right now when you're testifying? Is it just they're wanting information, or is it adversarial? How would you characterize the relationship with Congress between HUD, FHA, when you're testifying?
I'm always the optimist. I take every question as positive, whether it was intended that way or not. So I'll leave it to others if you want to listen to the testimony. A lot of good questions about the health of the fund, a lot of good questions about home ownership and whether we're doing enough. So, rhetoric aside, I think there's a lot of support for the fund, for FHA.
I think there is, but it's you know, here's where you start seeing the ideological divide that happens. Are we doing enough, or are we doing too much? And I think that's where we start seeing that divide begin to happen. Very fascinating on where this will all end up in the new year. Alice, let's run over to you, and then I'm going to go to Joe and Andy, the same order. Any other questions that you specifically have for Ed?
Well, yes, actually, I'm gonna put on my underwriter hat for a minute. So, Ed, I'm a FHA DE underwriter from a long time ago. If I gave you my letters, you would know how. I love the FHA program. I think it is such a valuable product for homeowners and always have, regardless of our market conditions. And one of the areas that seems to be one that could benefit, you mentioned earlier about the industry needs to do more for first-time home buyers. Well, it seems very often they fall into where automated underwriting just isn't their friend, maybe due to credit or other factors with it that really require some manual look. So I'd like to get your thoughts on, you know, FHA manual underwriting today, or does FHA really want to see that approve eligible from the automated underwriting systems?
Absolutely. I think, you know, we very much want to encourage people to do manual underwriting. The total scorecard gives a refer, does not give a denial. You will see, even going back when talking about certification, when we said, when we talked about defect, we did not talk about failure, you know, that it would have changed the result of total alone. You still could have approved that loan through manual underwriting. We would not consider it a defect. So we're doing everything we can to promote the use of manual underwriting. As you know, every person is a different story. Judgment is still very important. You have to follow the rules, but at the end of the day, you also have to use judgment in underwriting, and it's very important. Manual underwriting is an important part of that.
Well, I'm glad to hear you say that, because I know when we look in the FHA actuarial report, we see that each time the tranche for those lower credit scores, right, it's fewer and fewer loans. So I think lenders get concerned that they may be on a radar if they're manual underwriting. So I'm glad to hear those positives for manual underwriting.
Yeah, it's the problem, though, Allison and Ed, is that, you know, finding the number of underwriters that that can truly underwrite successfully. And so on a manual basis, so much of the industry has relied on AUSs for way too long. Joe Farr, let's run over to you. Thinking of several of the comments regarding secondary markets and what the things have. Let's go to you.
Actually, I read an article this morning in Inside Mortgage Finance that FHA's been given $13 million to upgrade or to use from in a technology fund, and I just wanted to find out what, if you had identified those priorities and what that money might be spent
for.
Great
question.
Yeah. Well, nothing's passed yet, so there's always the check's not in the mail. But we have been advocating additional funds for technology at FHA. Very important. It ranges from, I'd put it in two broad buckets. How we interact with the lending community needs to be updated. Some of those programs were written in COBOL, and sometimes they go down over the weekend. And
wow.
We want to make sure we have a very robust system so that lending is not disrupted. You know, some of it also goes to risk management and the questions around manual underwriting. We could do a lot better in providing the industry feedback and guidance so that they would be more comfort in doing manual underwriting. QC process and the like. So I put those in the two broad buckets of where we would spend the money. We have too many of our systems still written in COBOL.
When you said, think about that. I mean, you know, Jenny May was talking to Ted Dozier and Michael over there at Jenny May, and they were saying some of the systems, the archaic systems that are still there, the COBOL screens that still exist, it's just really astounding. So $13 million doesn't sound like much money for the amount of a hole when it comes to technology that you're digging out of. So it'll be real interesting how you deploy that. Good luck with that one, especially
Thank
in
you.
This market. So, yeah. Andy Schell, let's get over to you for our last question here before it looks like we're just about out of time here. So,
sure. Thanks, Dave, and welcome again, Ed. It's scary to hear about COBOL programming. I programmed COBOL 76, and it's still there. That's way too old.
Will you come help us fix it?
He's one of the few that still knows how to do it.
We're taking volunteers.
Nice that'd be a nice disaster. Well, you know, Ed, one of the things that I wanted to follow up on is Joe brought up the topic about the kids and the student debt, and I mentioned the person with a master's degree in English literature working at McDonald's, and you know, maybe they have enough money to pay rent, and maybe they're doing fine. They've got some cash flow. They're living they're making payment, maybe they're living with their parents and paying rent, or you know, have an apartment, whatever, and they can afford $1,500 a month, but they just can't get that down payment up. And you know, that it's just their life is like this. And so, and I am not a big advocate of zero down, but I think sometimes in the right circumstance, there's a cash flow that works. That I don't know. I know Alice is cringing hearing me even say this, because she likes 10% plus reserves. But do you see there being any place where FHA might consider a lower down payment product?
Well, the requirement's statutory, so we have the 3.5% down payment requirement out there. There are down payment assistance programs out there, but in general, it's a statutory requirement. I do go back. VA, as you know, is basically a 0% down and has run a very successful program. So there are ways of doing lower down payment, but for now, it's really a statutory requirement.
All right. Thank you.
When you look at the premium decrease that was announced last January, it definitely had an impact on home ownership. Can you drill down a little bit and give us some details on how the decrease has affected volume? And then I have to wrap it up after that. I can't believe we're already out of time, but yeah. Give us some insights on that.
Yeah, it definitely, our best estimate, if you go look at year over year and you look at people who otherwise probably would not have been served by the market below 680, we see over 100,000 families served that we attribute largely to the mortgage insurance premium reduction. So 100,000 new families per year is significant. It adds up, you know, over time.
Yeah, no kidding. It was encouraging to see that, and we'll have to see. Hopefully we'll see this fund continue to stay strong, and we have another 82 years of this very valuable program. There, Ed, thank you so much for taking time to join us today. We'd love to have you come back and share with us as we get close to wrapping things up. And hopefully you're going to be around for a little bit longer, that the new administration, whoever that may be, will keep you around, because you're a tremendous advocate for not only housing, but also you're a great spokesperson and providing wonderful leadership to FHA. And we're really grateful for you for the role that you're doing at HUD and FHA, and also for what you're doing across the industry just to help with what we have. Housing finance system here in America. Appreciate you so much.
Oh, thank you.
Folks, we have had the privilege of having Dr. Ed Golding, who is the Principal Deputy Assistant Secretary for the Office of Housing, joining us. It's been real interesting to get update on what's going on. We're in this silly season called, as David Stevens says, the silly season of this election, and there's a lot of policy, and we encourage you to get a hold of the candidates, encourage them to start talking about housing. We need to have this on the table and be talking about, being talked about in the election. I have written in, and I'm going to be getting some positive feedback too. So I think one of the things when you connect with guys like Dr. Ed Golding, you have the privilege of realizing they want to hear from you. So the biggest mistake you can do is remain quiet. Get out there and say something. Talk to somebody. Email those that are involved that could have an impact on the housing market. Keep it going. Let's get it into the discussion on the election cycle. Appreciate you joining us. Next week we've got Joe Dahleen coming in. We're going to circle back a little bit on some technology issues. Joe has done a great job of doing a number of things related to technology, and I'm very excited to have him on and share where he sees the future of technology going. Is mobile apps, is Rocket Mortgage really the thing? Well, we're going to have him on. We're going to get a lot of perspective on that. Appreciate you taking time to be a part of the broadcast, the Drum Signal. We are out of time. So tell others. I look forward to having you back next week, and hope you have a blessed and great week, everybody. Thanks so much for being a part of the podcast.
This has been Lincoln on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lincoln of Mortgage Banking Solutions, enabling executives to take their business to the next level. Today's guests were Joe Farr from MBS Quoteline, Andy Schell of Mortgage Banking Solutions, and Alice Alvey, President CMB of Mortgage U. Come by next week, and thank you for listening.